I'm Isabel, she, her, hers.
And I'm David, he, him, his.
And we're two therapists with ADHD who sit down to have some chats about ADHD. We can't promise we'll stay on topic,
or be professional,
or even remotely mature, but we can promise that you'll end up looking at you or your loved one's beautiful, neurodivergent brain in a shiny new way. This is not a therapy session. This is something shiny.
I love it.
Do you like it?
That's amazing. And can this just be the intro? You saying that and me freaking out about how amazing it is?
Yeah.
You know, and you dropping could, your voice.
That could be our
that's
first
so
intro.
Good.
So without further ado, welcome to Something Shiny.
I'm David.
There is no, this is, nothing about this, if you haven't guessed it yet, is any different than us just talking.
Spoiler alert, this is just us.
Spoiler alert,
this isn't a scripted show. I'm so shocked to hear this. This has ruined all of my illusions.
I mean, it's pretty telling that the one scripted thing was our intro, and even that, we didn't keep in the scripted part.
I was telling Luke about how I was going to come do this, in part to be like, is it okay if I use your name? Because I'm gonna. They're like, sure, I don't care. I'm ready to become ADHD famous. And they were like, wait, does this mean you get to sit there while Isabel does the like, I'm David? And I was like, I don't think they do that every time. I think that's pre-recorded.
I mean,
that would be great.
I am always game to do it. I was this close. I was really gonna, like, I was begging David to do it when we went to Denver. I was like, let's just do
The worst is you were right, Isabel. We should have done it. And we should have done it.
Now we know. You know what you know. But yeah.
You know, you just got you a little something to, like, keep the people hungry.
Keep the people hungry. Exactly. Oh, my goodness. So, first of all, it's so good to hear your voice and see your lovely beaming face.
I know, it's been so long.
It has been too long. I am so excited that we get a chance to talk. Thank you for making the time. Well, Ren, first off, so delighted you are here. Everyone listening, Ren is an incredible colleague of ours. David, is there anything you want to add, or you do introductions way better than I do.
Okay, world. Okay. This is Ren, and I work with Ren, and Isabel's work with Ren. And something you should know about Ren is Ren walks into rooms and beams. Like, you can make a connection with just about anyone, and I think that you can articulate things in a language that is not just like commonly understood, but like universally understood. And I think people that are like universally understood can really communicate about their experiences in ways that like not everyone can. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm really excited to be able to talk to you, Ren, because there's things about ADHD that like are so ubiquitous to the story, right? Like, okay, like ADHD in school sucks. And everyone looks around, they like pound rocks and like, yeah, school sucks. But then I do know, like, spoiler alert, like you have a unique experience with this in the world. And I'm just like, can I kind of out you a little bit and say like, you know,
oh yeah,
you are,
oh, this is great.
Yeah, you are not traditionally schooled. Would you say that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. There's actually, I think there's like extra lore that I'm going to share with you guys today that I don't think you've
heard. Oh my God. Okay. So can you tell,
oh my gosh, so excited.
Can you tell us a story?
The whole story.
Yeah. What was school like for you? And then like, like the ADHD-ness that you know now, like looking back on it, like what is it like to look back with a lens, you know, to see and understand behavior differently? If that makes any sense. Sorry, I'm just jumping in, but excited.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, there's a lot. Well, first of all, I'm going to do my little spiel so I can stop thinking about it. I'm Ren. My pronouns are they, them. Like David said, I'm a therapist at Willow. And yeah, I was homeschooled from the second day of first grade on through high school. On the first day of first grade, I had an altercation with a child who had been bullying me all through kindergarten.
Oh.
His name was Jack. I don't care.
Take that, Jack.
Yeah.
And every day of kindergarten, he would knock my blocks down. And I was the one who got in trouble for it. And so when we reached first grade, I was like, there's no teacher hovering in the background to make sure none of us eats our boogers. I'm coming for you. And my mom said, you know what? What if we just didn't play this game anymore? And then myself and all my siblings were homeschooled for the next like 18 years.
Wow.
And there's more reasons to it. Like, my parents are evangelical Christians. They were not happy with the schooling offerings in St. Louis, which is where I grew up. But that's how I tell the story. So I guess it's me. This is all my doing.
I love that you're sitting there being like, all right, black boy, like, this is, you're not protected now. This is, this is the wild school. So did you, like, you didn't, can I ask you about how you came to your ADHD diagnosis? Should we tell a little bit of that story?
Oh yeah. So my whole thing, this is interesting because one, let me see. I was diagnosed late in life. At this point, I'm going to tell the story in a way that makes the most sense. I started working at the Willow Center, and my friend Robin, around the same time, started thinking like, wait, I think I'm ADHD. Like, there's some stuff that's starting to come together. And I just got tested and I took all these quizzes and I'm doing all this research. And I was like, oh, some of the people I work with have a podcast. You should listen to it. And then I would talk to her on these long phone calls where she was like, no, but listen, I've put the pieces together. And I was like, oh, all of that sounds like normal stuff. that's not that dramatic. Like, whatever. And she was like, yeah, I think it is, though. I think this is diagnosable ADHD. And I was like, whoa, am I ADHD? And at first, I don't know how involved I should get with this, but at first I was like, okay, do I just think I'm ADHD because I work with a bunch of neurodivergents now? And like, I feel like new and I want to be part of the club. And like, there's this like singleton thing going on, like in the group, which like we can get into or not. But like, you know, is this just in my head or whatever? And then I talked to Robin about it for about, you know, 12 hours over the course of a week. It's like, maybe this is real, actually. The big thing, though, like when you do like your official diagnosis journey or whatever, like everybody always asks about school, like as an adult, like, oh, did you have problems in school? Like, were you restless and stuff? And I was homeschooled. And I wasn't just homeschooled, but I was I would say I wore the job title of eldest daughter very well, in that I was just like in charge of my schooling. So there are definitely times when I didn't do any homework for 2 weeks to 3 months, but there's no record of it. Yeah. Because I did it before report cards were due. So going through like the diagnostic interview and like all the questions about problems and stuff, I was like, well, listen, buddy, you're literally going to have to take my word for it. Like, I was in charge. And of course it says that everything was fine because I had the record book.
Wow. Wait, that's like the reverse. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wait, can I pause? Okay. I have so many questions in the, I'm just delighted already. A couple things. So one, can I ask, like, what were some of the things that Robin, your friend, mm-hmm. was mentioning where you were like, that's just normal, or like, that's just everyone? Like, is that really, like, I'm just curious if you can remember any. It's fine if none. Yeah.
I'm thinking, it's so funny. I'm like, okay, where was I sitting? I was sitting on the green couch while having this conversation with them. A few of the, I think the first things were stuff like, oh, the like, you know, the way boredom works and like anxiety and like how your brain is just like going and going and going and how it's hard to start stuff. Mm. Robin and I both have advanced degrees. So not fitting the mold of, oh, you know, you're having trouble in school, you're bad at stuff. But we also both have an extensive anxiety history, mm-hmm. and have done, you know, some very like intense, stressful things to not fail at school. So they're talking about like, oh, did you know that if you have an Adderall, it doesn't take 3 hours of getting it just progressively more upset before you can start doing tasks. And I was like, that sounds fake. Also, 3 hours seems dramatic. Like, I don't think it's that long. And they were like, no, but really, mm-hmm. It's great. You should try it. Like, it was more like that abstract kind of stuff of just like how you think. Like, it's like, I think the way we talked about it was, it's like you've been working with just white noise or like static in your brain forever. And you're just like, yeah, life is difficult. You just got to fight through the static and not be lazy or whatever. And then you find out, oh no, nobody, everybody's not doing the static. Oh, I'm a superhero, actually.
Like, oh my God, what is it like when I don't have static?
Yes. Yeah. I always tell people like 90% of my anxiety, I feel like, just went away immediately.
Yeah. Yes.
When yeah. I was like, oh, this is ADHD. Oh, I'm not failing to do a thing that I should be doing correctly. I am not passing as neurotypical.
Yeah.
Which for me, a person who has come out about different things like 4 or 5 times over the course of my life, I'm like, oh, okay, great. Add it to the stack. Like, we're not, this is a real identity. Great. I love this for me.
But that's such a good point in terms of like, you've done a lot of identity work in terms of like knowing who you are. And I think like there's this whole, like the, philosophically speaking, like knowing who you are is a constant process in life. But it almost sounds like you're saying like, oh, this just like, it was like a jacket that fit. Yeah, it fits. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. This is my jacket. And it was like this moment where it made sense contextually for you. And you're talking about looking back in life and being like, I had to really work myself hard to work. And then all of a sudden you're like, I don't have to work myself hard to, like, other people just work. I remember this thought when I first had medicine. I was like bragging, like talking to my mom. And I'm like, you don't believe it. It was so crazy. I just sat down and read the other day. Like, I just read. Like, I'm bragging. But like, you know, but all of a sudden.
Yeah. I'm not like fighting myself to keep my eyes on one line of the text at one time. It's just happening. And then I retain it. And then I go write about it. Incredible. This would have been nice 12 years of school ago. Fantastic.
Yeah. I love how you put that. And I'm so, I mean, goodness, that percentage you gave, right? Where like 90% of your anxiety just kind of went away. I really resonate with that. I find it, I think I actually went to you, David, and was like, but what do I do now that I'm not anxious about all the things? Because if I'm not anxious, I have no impulse control. it's like I almost went, and I noticed that increasingly. I don't know if this makes sense to you, and I want to go back to like 10 other things you said. So like, we'll just mosey on this way for a moment, if you're okay with that. I guess the question I have is, do you just seem so at ease with like, side note, that's just like of a piece, of a Ren piece, like to feel at ease. That is my sense of you, that you are very at ease. And I wonder, like for me, when my anxiety level shifted and I noticed I didn't have to feel so, maybe the word is like hypervigilant around getting certain things done or keeping things in order. Like that kind of came for me before I really was able to I was able to start meds, and also before I was really conscious of accommodation strategies. So like there was this moment where like it felt like I was unmasking at a way more rapid rate, if that makes sense, than I was really conscious of like, oh, but I can substitute all the anxiety about the laundry with like a new system, you know, that's I've come up with that's really friendly to me, right? It's like there was a huge gap in the middle, and that I will name for myself caused a lot of weird like kickback shame. If that makes sense, where I think I realized I was able to embrace myself, but then I was also then forced to embrace certain things that I struggled with that I kind of, I don't know if this makes sense. I'm just talking. Okay. I see a big nod. It's like, I couldn't embrace. I was confronted with my own limitations in a way that I really felt icky inside about, because it's like I had to constantly face my own. Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm making sense. I see nods.
No, I think so. I mean, when you said that, like, I immediately thought, like, oh yeah, no, there's some like trauma to undo there, and some like self-loathing type stuff that I certainly didn't even realize was a thing until I realized they were for keeps. That they were not going anywhere.
Yes. Like, you know what it is? It's because when I was anxious, I could always convince myself, oh, if I just do it more, or if I just like, I'll be more on it next time. It's like I almost had an infinite potential curve. Mm-hmm. That like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think as I learn accommodations and I learn about my brain, it's not that I don't have the infinite potential curve, but like, it's like I have to actually accept that there's like the page has been cut off.
Interesting.
And I'm like, oh, actually it serves me more to admit that I can't, but interesting. Cause anxiety just constantly would tell me I could, if I just did more. Okay.
This, I feel like to me, what comes up around that is like, okay, so it's the difference between like, I say this to my partner all the time. Well, there's real you and there's cartoon you. And like the cartoon version of you can just live in the Delulu and be like, yeah, you know, I could do anything if I had enough free time. Like, absolutely. I could learn how to do that. I could build that thing. Fantastic. And like most of the time it's harmless. But you just want to be knowledgeable about when we're clicking into one or the other. Like, I have a cartoon version of my partner that lives in my head. And I have to remember that was a conversation I had with cartoon Luke. Real Luke has no idea.
It's...
Oh, sorry. I'm just, my mind is blown already because I'm very much aware that, yes, it's a cartoon. Okay.
And it's great because in a cartoon, you can do anything. Like, it's animated. You could literally do whatever. And if you can see yourself doing whatever, the bounds of what you can do in real life are expanded, I think. But, you know, yes. I have Delulu as a way of life.
I'm going to be very specific about the cartoon. It's Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. That is exactly my cartoon. I was Wile E. Coyote, and I would constantly be exploding and falling off cliffs and everything. But I was like, I will eventually get Roadrunner. It will eventually happen, even though the game is rigged. No, maybe I thought I was Roadrunner, but I'm actually Wile E. Coyote. Anyway, no one knows what I'm referencing. Those cartoons.
There's this part of me, though, that like I feel like I shouldn't say something right now. Like, it's weird, right? Because I what I want to acknowledge is I'm not a person that like, sat in a lot of anxiety. I sat in a tremendous amount of shame. So for me, it was very, very different. Like, and the way I saw the world in front of me, I saw like, it was this level playing field, right? And you just got to keep marching. Like, look at everyone walking on this level playing field. And then like some parts of that playing field, like I could not, like, I don't know why, like it's level like everyone else, but I couldn't move. And then like started making me feel really bad about who I was because I didn't know that I was different. And I think that this ADHD diagnosis for me came later in life. I mean, I was in undergrad, college, right? And all of a sudden, it felt like the world was no longer level. That it like expanded into this 3D thing with peaks and valleys and like different like ice shelves and ridges and like, whoa, there's some like cool things on the wall. Like it was just a much more complicated environment that I didn't beat myself up for not being a mountain climber. I'm like, oh my God, yeah. Whoa, I was trying to climb a mountain. Holy sh! Get up. Wow, that's why the valley was better. Like all of a sudden things, the shame kind of went away for me with that. Does that make sense?
Okay. Can I say like an unnecessarily aggressive, like I'm going to take this to like way too serious of a place for a second. This is a perfect example of how white supremacy hurts everybody.
Yes.
Because the idea that the world is level is absurd.
Absurd.
Like, yes.
Like, I never had that. Like, I as people listening don't know me, I'm Black. And assigned female at birth and queer and non-binary. You know, like, never had the opportunity to think that, like, oh, yeah, if I work hard and bootstraps, like, I can do as well as everybody else. It's like, no, that's never going to happen. So, yeah, you're saying this, like, well, I should feel bad because I should be able to do as well as everyone else. And I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
I'm not acquainted with that particular beast, but it sounds like a terrible one.
In the 80s and 90s, the whole, what I really noticed around education was about, it was about making it equal for everyone. And it was about how everyone got the same thing. And then there was this whole talk around mainstreaming or not. So they would take kids that had learning disabilities and they would take them out of the classroom until their grades got better. And then they would put them back in the classroom.
Did that actually work?
No, it was like yo-yo effect. Okay. Kids got
bad. It was literally I wasn't there. I don't know.
You were not, but it wasn't good. Yeah. But it creates this metaphor of you're the one that's failing. Look, you got your needs met and now you're failing again. And look, you got your need. And like, who's the problem now? Because we, the school, are doing things. And I think it's shifted now way different because like there's way less. My hope, my bias here around education, I'll just like rip my like mask off. I don't know what's like, but like, this is about inclusion and this is about getting rid of just designated LD areas and creating inclusion areas where we have gifted LD and regular neurotypical students in the same room doing the same work with different expectations. Like that allows more modeling. It allows people to understand that the world shouldn't be leveled. And I think that there's this piece around like, I'm just like flying back to what you were saying, Randall, around like, of course it's absurd to think that way, but like when we're kids, like when you were a kid, was there a part of you, cause you weren't like thinking about LD or ADHD, but was there a part of you that felt like, being homeschooled, did school feel equitable for you?
I think this is where my sort of, I guess one of my aspects of my privilege comes in because I was the oldest. So like the way I did school was sort of the pattern that was attempted to be put on to each of my siblings. Sorry guys. And I'm the eldest of six. So there was a lot of that's not gonna work that just happened every few years. It's so funny. I was the like sort of type A, I just wanna learn something. The first day of homeschool, my mom tells this story, like she was still asleep. And she decided, okay, we're going to start homeschooling today. I woke her up and I was like, it's time for you to teach me something. Like, let's go. Whereas my brother, the child number two, is like, he got diagnosed early. He took our refrigerator apart. Like, he was much more, what's that? I'm going to do this. What's going on? I don't love reading. Like, I was always like, I'll read everything in our house and catalog it and tell you whatever you want to know. And he's like, I will catch a mole in a bucket and bring it in the house and then go, oh, wait, I didn't think about what would happen next. So yeah, the idea that like, there's supposed to be one standard for everybody never happened for me. But I think I was lucky in that I didn't have to. I was already like sort of at the top of the hierarchy of like standard learning correctly, quote unquote, kind of child. And like we belonged to a homeschool group and like you could tell pretty early on, I think, like which kids like were able to like pass for like, oh yeah, we know how school works. We're doing school. And which kids like you were like, yeah, no, you don't need to be at a desk ever. This is where you should be in this field right now.
Can I like get really excited? I mean, well, wait, no, that's not the right question. Of course I can get excited. I am so excited to like, can you give more details to like what the homeschool looked like? Because when I hear that, like you initiated a lot, like, was it kind of like, hey, you pick a thing and then we're going to like, I'm just so curious, like, if at all, was there any structure? Was the structure for you, like, I'm so curious, right? Like, what, I guess, like, how you knew which direction to go in.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, it sounds like I love your brother. I, like, love your description of your brother.
He's great. I love him. He's a bassist now.
I think I have one. Sorry, I'm laughing so hard, but I'm like, oh yeah, no, I know that feeling. And I think it's a Bobby.
Yeah, like he's Bobby, the kid you think of when you think ADHD.
Yeah, sweet, sweet Bobby, who is not here to represent himself today, but I'm sure he'll put in an insert to affirm or deny. But please, sorry. Yes, what was homeschool like? So, I mean, six of you, but you were the oldest. So like, when you started, we're all six on. I guess I don't know.
So there's...
Right, like what the sequence was, like how, what did it look like? Was it at home, actually?
So there's a 13-year gap between myself and my youngest sibling. So it actually goes like boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl. 2 to 3 years between, except for the last one, because he was a surprise. but so when we first started homeschooling, it was just me, my brother, and my sister. So like the top half of the kids. Mm-hmm. My mom, it is probably has the most executive function of anybody in the family. So she's very much like, okay, we're at least going to have like a list of subjects. There's going to be a plan for each subject. Sorry, I'm trying to decide how far down this rabbit hole to go. I have a lot of opinions about homeschooling in America and the state that it is in. And she just pulled from all the resources that existed and just like purchased textbooks and like purchased like fine literature. And like the homeschool group was really helpful because in St. Louis at the time, there was like, I would say like a couple hundred of us, if you count all the parents and the kids together, like we would get together at somebody's church or somebody's backyard, like once a week and like swap resources. There were some moms who were really good at music, a couple of moms who were really good at math, which was helpful. And so like there was sort of, over time it got like more structured, but like there were like we formed an orchestra and a drama class, and there was some tutoring stuff going on for a while there. And so it felt structured to me as a child. Now, when I went to college, I was like, oh God, there is so much being told what to do all the time. So it's all relative. But I got, like, my mom like printed up like a report card for us every year and like described like, well, in this way, you're doing a good job. And this other thing we need to work on. And like, here's your letter grade. And every year we took like a state test to kind of approximate like what grade level are you at these each like subjects. Now in the state of Missouri, I don't believe that that is required, but my mother has worked in education her entire adult life. So she's very much like, you know, I'm homeschooling for like values reasons, but we're not going to slack. Which was a challenge with six of us, frankly.
You're blowing my freaking mind. And I think this is like a certain level of ignorance that I have, you know, being a public school kid, because I've never homeschooled, but you're talking about like a vibrant community, like with a lot of different strengths, like being shared, and you're not being penalized for like wiggling is like the theme in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been a lot of work because frankly, I mean, it was like an evangelical Christian homeschool bubble, which I think has a very different character than maybe many other homeschool communities. But no, nobody's mom has the time or energy to be committed to you sitting still. Like we're trying to pack lunch for like 8 people, get out the door, like remember your instruments, like all of this. The concept of asking an authority figure if I could move my body from place to place was something that happened on TV.
Yeah.
But wow. I just want to stress that like I had a mom with like a high level of executive function and like a lot of education like background. So there's a lot of different ways to homeschool.
Thank you so much for listening. If you ever have that thought where you think, hey, I'm nothing, stop. Remember, you're something shiny.
That's right, just as you are. If you like what you heard and you want to hear more free episodes of this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review anywhere you listen to podcasts. We're on Instagram as Something Shiny Podcast. And if you're looking for more information, useful links, definitions, visuals, everything we can think of and more is on our website at somethingshinypodcast.com. And it's all free. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.